Welcome to Milkmaids Podcast, the unconventional homesteading podcast. I'm Stephanie from Wyoming.
And I'm Tara from Montana. Join us each week as we take a deep dive into an inclusive homesteading topic from canning, dairy animals, gardening, animal husbandry, and everything in between.
Hey, Tara.
Hi, Stephanie.
How's it going?
It's going.
Let's just get into it. Who are we shouting out this week?
This week, we are shouting out Toronto Black Farmers and Growers Collective from Toronto, Canada. So we do have a lot of Canadian listeners, and I think it's important to also represent those listeners and perhaps introduce them to local places such as Toronto Black Farmers and Growers Collective. So on their website, they state that they believe communities cannot thrive if they are not nourished and provided education. So they have really stepped in to provide this service collectively. They really make it a point to provide local, healthy, and culturally relevant food, along with workshops and opportunities for people from all walks of life.
That's amazing.
We see a community that is really doing the work and providing people with the opportunity to learn self-sustainability so that those people can nourish themselves and their own community. So when you teach somebody to plant like this and sustain this kind of food, you're actually helping not only their family, but the entire community. Because most people, when they learn this kind of food freedom, they really pass it on. We all experience that in the summer. Everyone shares their zucchini, right?
Right. You're getting zucchini whether you want it
or not. And that's such a blessing for people.
It is, yeah.
Especially in cities like this that just didn't focus on food. But I find that almost all cities now are including it. And I think it's just growing and growing and growing. They partner with other local city farmers to provide everyone with good, wholesome food, according to their founder, Jacqueline Dwyer. So if you're local to the area, you can volunteer during the growing season, or if you're interested in the foods they have to offer, you can sign up on their website. It's torontoblackfarmers.ca for Canada.
Awesome. I love that. I think that, as I'm learning, community effort is important.
Yes. We literally just had a talk about how you need to learn that it's okay.
Somebody gave somebody else a lecture.
I did. And she told me to get out. But I think that...
I'm leaving.
No, I think that we both need this lesson sometimes. Like, it's okay for us to rely on other people. And also, you and I are very giving as it is to the community. I mean, look at us. We put out a whole ass podcast to help people. So, yeah. I mean, just think, if anything, this December, like, think of what you can do to provide for your community in a healthy way. And accept help. Like, that's my biggest thing too.
Yeah.
It's okay to accept help.
I love that. All right. Well, if you want to help us, email us at milkmaidspodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us at Milkmaids Podcast on Facebook or Instagram. Please leave a review on iTunes. We're always looking for shout outs. Send them our way.
Yes, please do. We love seeing them and we love interacting with you all.
Totally. So, in the news.
That's my favorite part.
My fake in the news beep, yeah. Beeps.
And also, I have to say, I love when you get passionate about something and you're like, you know what? I'm researching this. And you just go for it.
I frequently send you things and I'm like, here's the article, but I don't really care what you have to say because I'm putting it in the podcast anyways.
That's the Aries in you. That's the Aries vibes.
This is what we're doing.
Right. You're such an Aries.
Yeah. Totally. Yes. Control freak to the T. Intensely so.
It's my favorite.
So, from all good news sources, TikTok.
Right. You learn so much on TikTok.
All the news comes from. So, on TikTok, our friend at Under the Desk News, they're amazing. I don't know if you guys have seen them. You know.
Yeah.
Tara.
We send Under the Desk News to each other all the time.
All the time.
Right. And about silly things, too, like dogs. Under the Desk News is great. Like, you can learn so much from them. So, check them out.
Yeah. It's awesome. So anyhow, they shared an article that I just had to look into more. So it's a Bank of the West Means and Matters article by Jolene Hansen, entitled 6 Ways Sustainable Agriculture is Changing the Business of Food. And the article is like a lot more, it's a lot longer, it's a lot more in depth. It actually covers 6 topics, but I just wanted to focus on one in particular, just because I guess my podcast, I can't, right? But it's women in farming, which is kind of our platform in a way, not exclusively, but obviously here we are. So The author Hansen points out that not long ago, women were only considered farmers' wives, period.
Yes.
Like, you're working right alongside the men and you're still the farmer's wife.
Or, yeah, and it's just so frustrating that it was never even taken into account that female women, people who mm-hmm. identify as a woman, weren't even considered.
Right. Right. We're just a product of the man.
Right.
Yeah. And that relic, I think, still sticks today in a lot of cases, despite the fact that women have been doing this work.
Seriously,
the whole time.
Like the whole term female farmers, right. Whereas men just.
Why is that necessary?
Farmers. So right. I did tangent. Hi, I have ADHD.
Coming in.
A couple years ago, I designed this shirt that said male farmer, and then the female version just said farmer on it.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I feel like we could sell it on here because it's still really funny to me.
I love that.
Because you always see these shirts that are like female farmer or somebody, and there's nothing wrong yeah. with that. It's just that we have to say we're a female farmer and men just get to be farmers.
Right.
Right. So.
Right. No, it's true. In one respect, like the whole like farm her and yeah. female farmer, that kind of stuff is like drawing attention to it and like taking it back.
Right.
Right. Which is cool. But you're absolutely right. Like, why is it necessary that I identify my sex before my occupation? Because the men have never had to do that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I had the same problem when I was a firefighter. They're like, oh, you're a female oh, yeah. firefighter. I'm like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's so, yeah, it's just something to think about that bothers me thing. Personally.
It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. And it's hard to calculate the exact number of women farmers through time because they weren't commonly considered farmers, right. first off. And to go even further, it wasn't even until the 1978, that one. 1970.
I'm leaving that in. It's so funny.
Good.
To me.
Good.
The year of 1978.
Infamous, that year.
Oh, good.
Good. That the USDA even asked the sex of the farmer. So women have just been kept out of the conversation in general.
Right.
And they're trying to do better now to collect data on how many women farmers, female farmers, there are truly on the scene. A 2017 census gave us these numbers. 9% of farms were operated solely by women. Only nine. Which is
nine,
unreal.
9%.
Yeah. 56% had at least one female producer. And women comprise 36% of producers nationwide, which is a 27% increase from 2012.
Right.
Although, you know, how much are those statistics accurate based on how they were collected? It's hard to say. So while it does look like there's an increase in women farmers, it's just truly hard to tell.
Right.
Again, you just can't tell. So it is pointed out that, quote, female farmers in the United States still face a number of obstacles when they're running a farm, access to land, credit, and networking, just to name a few, end quote. I'm out of breath from reading. This baby is in my lungs babies. So much that I am out of yeah. breath from reading.
Yeah, it's a thing.
And I know that I've seen that firsthand as a female farmer. Like when we were doing markets heavy last year, I'd see a significant increase in profits and customer transactions at farmers markets where Brian was there with
right.
me. It would really kind of boil my blood. If it was just me, sometimes people wouldn't even approach, let alone make a sale. Like you could make a tally mark for each customer interaction you had.
Yeah.
So anyways, and I would assume this is not isolated just to farming. I would assume this is probably any supposed male dominated industry, but still annoying nonetheless.
Right.
So one exciting part of women being more involved in farming is that, quote, 54% of women entrepreneurs prioritize climate impact compared to only 41% of men.
And this rings so true. Just what you and I are doing, or what we were doing prior to this, we know so many farmers that do prioritize climate, their environment, et cetera. They don't just think of their profit. They're thinking of the whole picture.
Right. So because I probably know your answer, both real and sarcastic.
Yes.
I'm going to ask that you don't answer this out loud. What about being male makes you care less, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, don't answer it because I can pretty much fill in that blank.
Right.
But like, I just think it's kind of I think it's weird.
Yeah.
Like it's not necessarily surprising to me. I think it's weird. But anyhow, this shift could offer us some exciting changes in farming practices moving forward. And furthermore, just having a female presence in the industry will hopefully change the perspective on who's perceived to be capable of farming,
right.
which I think is like so important and so ridiculous all at the same time. So anyways, go check out the article. It was just an interesting very interesting read. And it also prompts a very well-deserved congratulations to our Milkmaids listeners. Like, you guys are defying the odds and pushing forward as female farmers.
Seriously.
And I know that we have a ton of male listeners as well.
Yeah.
And, like, congratulations to you, too. We are happy to have you, by all means, happy to have you. And chances are good that you wouldn't be listening to us if you didn't somewhat agree. So, just if you're a woman farmer, congratulations.
Right.
You guys are killing it.
Right.
If you're not, go out and thank one.
Yeah.
Shit's hard.
And I think a lot of the times, too, we bring up something that's maybe difficult for other people to accept. Like, sometimes people just don't want to accept that females were ostracized from this kind of business.
And right.
It's a fact. Like, these things are facts. So opening your mind to these things is really helpful. So thank you for listening. And thanks for talking about that, Steph.
Yeah, totally. It's important to talk about. Yeah, you're right. It can be uncomfortable sometimes if you're not already on that.
Listen, if you're not willing to have uncomfortable conversations, you are not an adult. Point blank. Right. Like, we all got to have uncomfortable conversations. That's the only way growth is possible, right?
Right.
Right. So let's do that on our podcast. You're welcome.
Love it.
Yeah.
Did you do an icebreaker?
No, that was our icebreaker. I don't want to break your heart. Go ahead and do the icebreaker that you brought.
But I wanted to do an icebreaker.
Your face was like so excited. I was like, no, that's our icebreaker. And then you were so sad, like a child who got a cookie taken away from them.
I just had one. It was kind of cool.
Let's do your icebreaker.
Fine.
If we must.
Do you know what a sunberry is?
No.
Or a wonderberry?
No.
Have you gotten your, it's not an icebreaker, it's just 50 questions. Have you gotten your seed catalog from Seed Savers Exchange?
No.
Why?
This is a hard icebreaker. Okay. I feel like I'm really being hard. Interrogated. This is not an icebreaker.
I don't
know
why you would know why. Right. Why am I asking you that? Look at this. For everybody in this non-visual audio.
So it looks like they have stems that are like little flowers and then they're like purple berries. Right?
Purple berries, right. So I've never heard of such a thing. If you guys have the Seed Savers Exchange catalog, it's on page 49. It's called a sunberry.
Flip to page 49 in your Seed Savers Exchange magazine.
If you're following along.
If you're driving, pull over.
Immediately. Go to your local post office now.
Pick it up.
But it says it's also known as wonderberry. So it says, bred by Luther Burbank in the early 1900s, distributed by John Lewis Childs as Wonderberry. Great controversy ensued over the plant's provenance and a true identity, and the Burbank's reputation was badly damaged.
I love some good seed tea.
Right.
They're spilling the tea in this magazine, too. Damn.
No idea. It says it's a I have such a hard time with this word. Plurific?
Prolific. This is something prolific. I can say and you can't.
Cool.
Because I have whipping prolific cream on my face.
Bushy plants loaded with small, slightly sweet blue berries. And I was just flipping. I love this catalog. It's just so pretty. And I love what they do. We've talked about them before.
Yeah, but Seed Savers Exchange is awesome.
I was flipping through and it says 50 to 75 days. So
that's perfect for you.
I can do that.
Yeah. Wait, they're not perennial.
No, I don't think so. Like berry, when you hear the word berry, you kind of assume it's a bush. But when I look at it very closely, it kind of almost more resembles a tomato.
We're trying it.
Yeah, like I think that I might actually order it. But I'm curious if any of our customers know what this is, because I've never even heard of it.
Yes, our customers. We're selling goods now.
I can't with my words today.
No, it's a hard day, guys.
If anybody who knows us knows what this is, let me know.
I want to grow
it. Worth my time.
It's almost like the tough. What are the socks?
Darn tough. Why do we need to quit today?
Wash. This is a wash. No, the darn tough socks. Speaking of challenges that we do, I lost one sock.
I did too. I'm not kidding you. I'm not sure what their policy is on lost.
But you can't lose socks, you guys. Well, together we have a match. So we have one pair.
One pair collectively. We share custody of the one pair.
Right.
Every other weekend we mail it back and forth to each other. All of the holidays?
Yes.
Come on. I'm going to have to check our agreement.
We're going to court.
Oh my gosh.
What is wrong with us? Like, how do you lose the sock?
I'm sure mine's around somewhere.
It's got to be.
It's got to be. But yeah, I was just looking for it on Sunday.
Yeah, I just spent like an hour of my life yeah. looking for the other one.
Cool.
Yes. So cool. They work as long as you don't lose one.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Anyways.
Maybe the snowberries will work out. Are they called sunberries?
Sunberries. Sunberries they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a farm update? I don't really have anything except I'm making a lot of dairy things. So I've made butter, cream cheese, yogurt, whipping cream, dulce de leche that I'm giving as gifts. So
nice.
I'm just going to town and with dairy, but I'm not doing as much cheese as Brian is.
Brian is killing it on cheese.
That's lately. So helpful.
Like every single weekend he's doing a cheese a day, which is like 2 to 4 pounds of cheese, depending on what recipe he's doing. But anyhow, he's so cute. He just got a whole order in the mail from New England Cheese Making. And he got the, I never know how to say it right, the annatto. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Which is a natural cheese coloring that turns it yellow.
Yeah.
Right? Or orange, rather, maybe. And so he went through his book to pick out one to make just to try it, just to give it a shot.
He had to try it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is like the coolest cheese. So he has a Colby going right now.
That's it's so really pretty.
It's really cool. And he did a 4-pound Havarti last weekend. Oh, he did Swiss.
Baby Swiss. Yeah.
Yep. So anyways, he's having a ton of fun with it. We haven't really eaten much, but...
No, it's that's a thing. You have to...
That's how it goes.
Let it cure.
Exactly. Virgie. Back to Virgie. Last time we recorded, I was so confident she was pregnant. Right. And I still am confident I was right.
I think so, too.
Yes. So a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, she slipped in the parlor. Long story, but the floor was wet. She slipped in the parlor. Seemed fine. Right? Everything fine. She was pretty freaked out by it. Like, she wasn't happy about it, obviously. But we milked. She was fine. Brian kind of freaked out about it. Like,
it's scary because she's so big that it's like...
She's huge.
Even my mini, if she falls, I'm like, oh my... It's scary. Mm-hmm. It just is scary.
Yeah. And cows... they do fall.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of surprising. They fall. Whereas I don't think my goats have ever fell.
No.
You know what I mean? Like... But the cows fall, and then they are big animals, so when they go down, it's like...
Right. And you and I crap. Are and then, used to horses, and like when a horse falls down, like you're like, oh gosh, this is it. This is how it ends.
Well, because if they break a leg, they're done.
They're done, yeah.
There's no fixing it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, but none of that happened. She was fine. It was just alarming. So moving on, then that was like 2-ish weeks ago. And then Saturday, a couple days ago, Brian comes in from chores, and he's like... I got bad news. What? That chicken, our miniature Hereford, mounted Virgie, right? Which is usually a sign of being in heat. I told him, I'm sure it's not. Like, her production didn't drop. Nothing changed. She had no other signs of heat.
Yeah.
Right? None whatsoever. And cows will also mount themselves if they're just excited.
Right.
Like, sometimes that does happen.
Yeah.
So I just was like, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. And then this morning, I'm doing chores. So this is Monday. So 2 days after the mounting, right?
Yeah.
This morning, I'm doing chores. And I had milked. She came in, milked great. Everything was fine. Didn't see anything. Didn't notice anything. Milk production still completely normal. And then I'm out throwing hay. And I happened to just pick this one area to throw hay. I could have missed it so easily.
Right.
That I notice a... non-frozen pile of poop, so it had to have been
fresh
from the last few hours.
Yeah.
And it had a pretty decent amount of bright red blood on
it. Yeah, it wasn't like old dark blood, it was bright red.
Yeah. So I'm like, what in the heck is that? And the poop also kind of looked like she may have been like laying down when she pooped potentially, or she laid on it.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of hard to differentiate that maybe, but it had crossed my mind that it may be vaginal, right? Which, of course, I immediately sent Tara a picture.
I did, yeah. Again,
because
we'll have to delete each other's pictures when we die.
To your best friend is super normal.
Yeah, just another Monday.
Right. And she's so sweet. She, like, jumped online and Googled all this stuff of possibilities while I was finishing chores. And anyhow, I went out there right before we started recording to run a bunch of waters and what have you. And I went and just double checked on Virgie to see if I could see she was out there laying down. So I was like, well, maybe she's pooped over there because they ate breakfast over there. I'll look to see if I can find another pile. And she has a little puddle of bright red blood on the ground, and then it's clearly coming from the vagina.
Yeah.
So we for sure have vaginal bleeding. I don't know why. I discovered that came in and started recording. So I haven't done any more research really. if she is sloughing the calf, I'm surprised I'm seeing any sort of signs whatsoever.
Yeah, they usually reabsorb for how early mm-hmm. she is.
Yeah, because she's been bred like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
If that.
And
so anyways.
Maybe you just see a little bit. I mean, it doesn't yeah. look like a giant amount. So
well,
it's
and this
noticeable.
Could be a little bit right. too. Because when I went out to check her, like when I was feeding her, yeah. when she was milking, there was no sign of any blood anywhere near her. Mm-hmm. Like her vagina looked normal.
Her tail, the base of her tail.
Butt looked normal.
Right.
Her tail was completely normal.
Right.
So I just happened to see that one pile. Yeah. In a big pasture. It's kind of lucky I even saw it. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I don't really have any more to add to that, but I'll keep you guys updated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's not much you can do anyway. There's nothing really that you could do. Mm-mm. No.
Yeah, there's nothing to do about it right now. The decisions that we'll have to make, I think that, I mean, the first step is to get her tested.
Yeah.
And so I'll count the days. I may be close enough to pee test her here soon.
Yeah.
And if I am, then great. I'll just do that and see what it says. I can do blood tests now, I'm pretty sure. I'm positive. I can do blood tests now.
Yeah.
So I may do that. If she did drop the calf, then I have to decide if I want a winter calf or if I just want to wait till spring.
Yeah, which is not a big deal to like do a winter calf because, I mean, it's not ideal, but you're not calf sharing anymore. So it's not like she's out there or the calf is out there.
Yeah, no, I can tuck her in the barn, the calf in the barn too.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a matter of the actual calving.
Yeah.
It's harder and you've got to make sure you catch it and get that wet calf picked up and
right.
everything else.
But logistics, man. They'll kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes. And I'll have a newborn.
Oh, yeah. That whole thing.
I'll have a newborn. And the idea of leaving the newborn while I go out to the barn in the middle of the night. Yeah, we'll just see. There's a lot to figure out.
Right.
Nothing's been decided yet. So
keep you updated. What's our main topic this week?
So we are going to go over on-farm milk testing.
Yay.
So before we get into this too terribly much, we want to direct you to our raw milk episodes back in April.
That's when they were recorded?
Yeah, I checked.
Yeah, you had to listen to both of them again.
I did, yeah. Because I didn't want to repeat a bunch. And it had been long enough, I couldn't remember if I included this part or that part or what have you. First off, there's a ton of milking information in there on raw milk, milk handling, etc., as well as info on bacteria and raw milk specific bacteria, and also generalized testing info. All of that will help build on this episode. You don't have to listen to it prior necessarily, but it's definitely more in depth. So here's the deal. At some point, my dumbass.
English is hard. We have established this.
Went the entire episodes saying chloroform.
Right.
Instead of coliform.
Whoops.
Entirely different things. I mean, they're both not real good for you.
Right.
So there's that. Anyhow, so when you listen back to the episode, please be merciful on me.
That happens.
I don't know why I said all that. I know better. Anyways, and we're not re-recording it. That was those two episodes were doozies.
Right.
So just know that. Yeah. Anyways, go listen to them regardless of my stupidity. So there's three main tests that I perform here on my farm, and Tara does the same, just not necessarily all on farm. But I, even though I do most of mine on farm, I also pepper in tests from a professional lab as well, both to just test for a wider scope of things, but also to double check my work. And the wider scope is kind of more specifically when I have an animal first come into lactation, I test for a wide range of things.
Yeah.
And then kind of dial it down to my maintenance routine. But when I was developing my protocol for testing, I'd collect a sample for the lab and then also one for myself out of that same milk. So I would start my on-farm test at the same time that the lab samples were going to be arriving in the mail to the lab.
Right.
Right.
Willing that they didn't lose it. FedEx, come on.
That's happened so many times to me.
Just to you, specifically.
Specifically. Mail in Wyoming is a weird thing.
It is.
It's an elusive creature. So when the results came in, then I knew I had it set up for a direct comparison to confirm that we both got the exact same results, right? And that helped me confirm that what I'm doing on the farm or what I'm doing with my on-farm testing is correct and accurate. So we're going to go through a how-to, but remember, disclaimer, this is your health, not mine. So continue to do your own research on this topic. And I highly recommend that you do the same method of testing that I did, where you compare it to a professional laboratory.
Don't to make sue sure. us.
Yeah, we're not a professional laboratory,
right?
We're not standing there watching you do it correctly or watching you do it incorrectly or what have you. So it's just one of those things that I was pretty adamant about doing this episode because I was very much so struggling.
Right.
The number of times that I paid 60 some odd dollars to FedEx to ship my package and it just did not arrive.
Right.
So now I'm out the 60 something dollars in shipping, the $9 for an insulated cooler, the couple bucks for ice packs and the milk tube samples. Yeah. I mean, it's like $100.
Right.
Like $100 just to not have any results. And then I get to do it again.
Right.
Anyhow, I just got frustrated with, again, always having to rely on somebody outside my farm.
It's the lesson of the year, I guess.
Right. So I will do it my damn self is like how that's just my personality.
Yes.
But there is hardly any information out there. Unless you want to buy a several hundred thousand dollar machine.
Right.
That you put the milk into and it reads.
And this is something that quite often larger dairies will have.
Yes.
They just have I this. Know. And it's not cost effective for people like us that want to know. A lot of us, if you're listening to this, you probably want to know your results and you want to keep track of that. Well, we're not going to buy that big fancy machine, are we?
No, it costs more than my house.
Right. Unfortunately. Yeah.
So
if somebody would like to donate one to us,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
We'll share custody of that too. Yeah. We'll ship it back and forth with the sock. And this will surprise none of our regular listeners because I mention this book every other episode because it's my favorite. It's called The Small Scale Dairy by Giannakis Caldwell. It's a great resource for all things dairy. It does cover the science, the how-to, and the practical. But there are step-by-step directions for testing in her book as well. And that's where I learned a lot of what to do. It definitely gave me a ton of jumping off points. I'll put the link for that in our show notes. If you haven't picked this book up yet, you really should, especially if you're going to go forward with testing and stuff. It's just such an amazing resource to have. One of the tests that I do and Tara does both on our farm is the CMT. So take it away, Tara.
So this is fun. This is a pet peeve of mine. If you say CMT test, you're saying California mastitis test. So just say CMT, right? It's just one of those things. Like you wouldn't say a baby calf.
It's just like a calf. PIN number.
PIN number?
Think about it.
Oh. Yeah.
You're like, wait, that's totally different.
No, that's not even the same. No, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. But everybody does that one too.
Yeah. Or like people will say udders for one cow.
Udder.
It's udder. I don't know.
Udder.
Says us when you said chloroforms, but.
Chloroforms.
We have no business telling people what to say.
1978.
Yeah. We're on a roll today. So CMT stands for California Mastitis Test. This is a very common, very easy, and very cheap method for testing on farm. I have one. I think the whole kit is like, what is it? Like 20 some dollars? Do you remember?
It's 17, actually. I looked it up.
You did?
I sure did.
Oh, yeah. And it comes with purple liquid, the paddle. I have a nice paddle. So yeah, Stephanie said here, an entire kit from Hamby is only $17 and it will last a very, very long time. Even in your case, you have goats that you test and you had several cows that you tested.
I've had the same kit for years.
Yeah. And I have the same one that I bought when I bought my milk cow and I still have so much solution left because you mix it. You dilute it with water. This is a quick review, but CMT tests for somatic cell counts, not bacteria. So somatic cells are white blood cells, leukocytes, and other broken cells that can indicate the presence of an infection. And the most common version of the CMT is a plastic paddle, and it has four shallow cups and a long handle. The kit also comes with a purple reagent, which is usually sold as a concentrate that you will need to dilute down. The directions will tell you what to dilute it down. The bottle that I have shows the lines where you need to fill it up and why. It's just important not to freeze this. So this does stay in my house and it comes outside every Monday when I remember to test the cow. So how you perform the CMT? Carry out your pre-milking cleaning as usual. So this includes the stripping part when you take the three squirts out of each teat in order to make sure that you have good clean milk. And you can collect your testing milk whenever during your milking process. I collect right before I start the regular milking collection. This way I don't forget to do it. So the way I do it is I get her all cleaned out and then I strip out the milk that's in the teat. And then I put the milk in each cup with the handle facing towards her head. So I remember which cup belongs to which teat. And then I go ahead and iodine dipper and then do all of that. So the iodine is drying while I am testing her. It just saves me time if I do it that way. So Stephanie does use this on goats. You'll use just 2 cups instead of 4. And if you have a setup, some people have a setup where they have 2 goats that are going to be milked at the same time because they have kids that want to do it. You can go ahead and use the top half for 1 goat and the bottom half for another goat and test all at the same time. I've seen people do that before too. So when you do this, you'll tilt the paddle. You just want to pour off excess milk to get the correct amount. And my kit, it has the circles showing you which level is which. I see a lot of people mess this up on YouTube. That's why we don't suggest it to learn everything that you need to know.
Right.
Most paddles do have that line. Yours doesn't though, Steph, right?
It doesn't, no. So I've just done like a trial and error to make sure I get the right amount.
Yeah. And you want to add the reagent at this time after you make sure, and then you add it to the second line. So the first line is for milk, and then the second line is for the reagent. And that'll give you the proper amount to react with the milk.
And at the end of the day, your directions on your kit are going to tell you exactly what to do. Lines or otherwise. Yeah.
And the most common mistake that people do is that they don't add enough reagent. So like 2 squirts on top of milk is not going to do anything. And then you're going to want to swirl. And as you swirl, you'll need to start looking for thickening or clumping of the milk mixture. And it's really confusing when you start this because hopefully you start out with a cow that never has problems and never has had problems. And then you hyper-focus and you look into it and there's nothing there to see. But once you actually do have a case of mastitis, it's very simple to see. It's like clear as, you know, the sun. I don't know how to explain it. It's just so easy to see. It clumps so well, and then it just looks like snot when you dump it out.
There is a video on YouTube that is a guy, I think he may even be a veterinarian, but he's got a Holstein in a chute.
Yeah. It's a really good one.
Find that video. Because it shows a Holstein that has a problem.
Right. It's snot.
Which is, yeah, good to know.
Yeah. It's purple snot. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it really does.
But the problem with the CMT is that it's truly subjective. The real best way to use this is to do regular testing and get to know your cow or your goat's baseline. That way you can compare and also notice a change right away. But as a general guideline, here are the test results, like sort of. So trace gelling happens at 300,000 cells per milliliter. Thickening but not clumping happens at 500,000 to 1 million cells per milliliter. Thickens and clumps at over 1 million cells per milliliter, and clumps and also sticks to the paddle over 2 million cells per milliliter. Like, if you have that, holy shit, you got problems. Seek help.
Yeah. Immediate help.
Immediate help. And I only had, I would say, trace gelling.
That's the worst I've ever had, too. Yeah. And it's like very gentle trace.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually did make a TikTok on how to do this. If anyone's interested, I could probably dig that up too. When my cow did have mastitis, it was very little. We had a whole mess of problems. It wasn't anything that could have been avoided as far as mastitis, but it was good for me to learn, honestly. So most of us at the homesteading scale will be dealing with trace gelling at worst. This is just because we monitor our cows so closely and we've usually noticed problems before they get bad enough to show up on the CMT. Again, if you're drinking this milk and you're filtering it, you should check that filter every time. And that's actually a good way to just get an idea of how your cow is performing or your goat is performing. That filter will tell you a lot too. So if you're watching that, that's a good way to go about it.
Totally.
And we both test with the CMT once a week on Mondays, Mastitis Mondays.
Yep, you got it. Mm-hmm.
So SPC-APC. SPC stands for standard plate count and is generally the term that the labs will use for this test. You'll see it a lot on their sheets. It just says SPC usually and gives you a number. Another term for the same test is APC, which stands for aerobic plate count. This is essentially just testing for aerobic bacteria, which just means bacteria that needs air to survive. This is a very general test, casting a wide net, if you will. So essentially, it's ran at 90 degrees Fahrenheit for 48 hours and gives a total number of colony-forming units. This generalization about the test, that means it is actually testing both good and bad bacteria. The difference comes in that if you have high numbers, it's an indication that your milk has the bad dudes instead of higher numbers of good dudes. So bad guys replicate so much faster, typically. They're just ready to fight, I guess.
That's what they do.
Coliform, right?
Yes. Right?
Yes. Coliform count or total coliforms, TC, it's usually abbreviated TC, especially on the papers that we get from Utter Health. They're always saying TC for some
TC,
reason,
yep.
Which is confusing if you're not used to it, but you can call them and bug them and ask them all the questions because you pay them the dollars. So.
Right, yeah. Right.
As we discussed in our raw milk episodes, most coliforms are harmless. However, the ones that can exist in milk can be extremely harmful. This is why it's important to keep an eye on this test. Milk is just like the perfect breeding ground for bacteria. It's
absolutely
just like the perfect little home for those bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. To run this test, you'll plate on specific agar and then run at 90 degrees Fahrenheit for 24 hours. Again, no, I don't know what the Celsius is of that. I apologize.
I know, we're the worst.
Ugh, someday we'll get it. We'll mention Celsius on our Patreon when that is a thing. Right.
That's what you pay for.
Right. Celsius.
Conversions.
Yeah. The shorter time is because coliforms grow so much faster than the other bacteria and can be evaluated much more quickly.
Yeah, totally. So a generalized testing routine here. This is just kind of what I do. So once you get set up on your farm to do on-farm testing, you really can test as frequently as you want with generally little hassle and for really very little expense as well, which is the nice part about it. And you'll want to test a lot, especially while you're learning, or if you make any changes at all to your milking routine, or if you notice anything off about your animal at all. As a general rule for us, this is to say that everything is normal, nothing has changed. We run the CMT weekly on Mondays, and then I do the APC-TC once a month. So the standard, or the aerobic plate count and total coliforms once a month. We also do a monthly deep clean on the dairy and the equipment. And I talked about this in particular in the milking machine episode. If you missed it, circle back there. I take a sample of my milk like the day or the milking before we do this deep clean. Because in theory, this would give me the worst look at our milk, right? The dirtiest that it should ever be is at the end of the routine right before we clean it. So just to make sure, I do that just to make sure that we don't need to increase our cleaning protocol or any of that.
Right, because you don't want to change, like you don't want to do the absolute best that you can when you're taking a milk sample. You want to do what you do most often, right?
What you do every single day.
Because you want a good picture of your milk, and that's not giving you a good picture if you're only wearing gloves or whatever the day you're taking the sample.
Yeah, and that's something like my little type A straight A personality was so bad about at first. I would like disinfect my countertops and I would wear gloves and I would wash the gloves and I would do hand sanitizer and I'm going to do this test just right. But it's like, I don't put on gloves or disinfect my countertop when I pour myself some milk.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's like, you do want to be clean so that you are getting accurate results. But yeah, you don't want to deviate too much from your regular routine because that's what you need to be testing.
Yeah.
So with that being said, again, I do still send off to the lab. I send as frequently as I feel like I need to be comfortable. I send off until I get consistent results when the animal first comes into milk. And I really, again, like mid-lactation, just to double check my work. This step is obviously optional. I just like to make sure I'm where I need to be. And remember that because I'm telling you how to do this does not mean that I'm making sure you're doing it right. So get consultation from your professional laboratory too to confirm. Testing equipment needed. We already went through the CMT in detail, so we won't spend any more time on that. The rest of the episode is going to be just about the APC-TC. So you're going to need an incubator, and you can do this as redneck as you want.
Yeah.
Trust me, I started there.
Yours was like a Brambleberry box, wasn't it?
At one point, yes. You'll need something that can keep a sample at 90 degrees for 48 hours. That's really all you have to figure out. Sounds super simple.
Right.
And in a lot of ways it is, right? So if you want to DIY it, go for it. For the first bit, I experimented with different variations of cardboard boxes. First, I started off with an insulated box.
Yeah.
That was way too hot. It kept it way too hot.
Yeah.
And then I went to a super lightweight box, like a cracker box kind of thing. Nope, way too cold. I ended up with like a heavy duty cardboard, but this is what I did, right? Like, anyhow, I used cardboard boxes with certain towels, very specific towels, and a seedling heat mat.
Yeah.
Is what I used.
Because you already had that on hand.
I did all that for $0.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was okay. I was getting results. The problem was, is I was getting sometimes 82 degrees, sometimes 97 degrees.
Right.
Which meant that my results, like I was growing bacteria, they just never matched the lab. Sometimes I was growing them way too well. Sometimes I wasn't growing them nearly enough. I'm not that. Right.
Right.
We know us.
Yeah.
Or we know me at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not.
It has to be 90 degrees perfectly.
I know. The other couple ideas that I had that I didn't pursue because I did not have them on hand was a dehydrator, potentially. If you could set the temperature correctly and then seal off the test, so you don't want them to evaporate, right?
Yeah.
But the dehydrator heats up to like a moderate amount. I'd be curious what that is. I never did do it because the only dehydrator I owned at the time was the one I used for food.
Yeah. And you don't want to be growing that.
No, but I feel like dehydrators are something that like is given to you by somebody, or you could find it at a garage sale for $5 or something. So if you want to give that a go, that may or may not work. A chicken incubator too would be a, some people buy one of those and do it once and then never do it again. Yeah. You know? So that might be an option too, but ultimately you can buy small incubators intended for home use. If you look at the laboratory supply places or medical places, they're going to be about $400. And this is an inconsistency in Giannakoulis Caldwell's book now. When she wrote it, I'm confident that you could find one for under $100.
I think it says book it was pretty cheap.
Yeah, and she mentions the company exactly where she got it for under $100, and they're $400 now. So welcome to our world.
Right.
Now, $400, I mean, even at such $400, keep in mind like how many tests through a lab with your shipping situation. Mm-hmm. That adds up fairly quick. So anyhow, what I ended up stumbling upon. Anyhow. It's my new thing.
You did not mean to say that.
I did not.
Okay, good.
Anyhow. What I ended up stumbling upon was a reptile incubator.
I was so happy when you discovered this. Like, who else's brain?
I know, but all I told you was, Tara, I just bought a reptile incubator.
And I knew exactly what it was for.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to surprise you none that I was like all of a sudden into reptile
breeding. Right, that would not surprise me. You're like, I'm going to do this.
This is what I'm into now. Mm-hmm. So
we're off to do the new hobby. Right. I spent hours researching the hobby.
I'm no longer interested in the hobby. Yes.
ADHD is fun.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So this reptile incubator, this thing is freaking awesome. They're small and totally customizable. I'm going to have a link in the show notes to a specific one I got. It's only $160.
For now, then the price is going to blow up when everyone listens to this. And they're like, we're all going like, to buy this.
She says chloroform and lies about prices. Yes,
right. At the time of recording, it's only $160, friends.
Right. Yeah, this thing is great. It's like, I love it. So anyhow, and if I ever decide to change my hobby from dairy to reptiles, which I'm on the verge of at the moment.
You're set.
I'm set.
Yes.
So you're also going to need petri film plates. So these, well, there's definitely more than one way to plate bacteria, but this is the way to go. So 3M makes a product called petri film. And they're these little rectangle pieces of papers with bacteria food essentially spread on the inside of them and a clear film that goes over the top. So you can buy all sorts of plates from 3M. They make a whole bunch of different types. But for our purposes here, you'll want to get plates for APC and then also the plates for TC. And they are two different plates. So we'll have the links in our show notes. And they used to sell the APC in 50 count. I'm not seeing that now, which means that you do have to buy 100 count, which brings the price up. But it will last you a very long time, especially if you settle it.
They don't expire.
Eventually they do.
Okay.
Eventually they do. But you've got time to use them up.
Right.
But the price, though, it works out for the APC and TC to be like $3 a testing.
Okay.
Which
like
is...
Like both the plates, the APC and the TC. So $3 a testing, which is like ridiculously cheaper.
Super cheaper.
We're off. We're doing well today, friends. We are
doing well. You will also need a spreader plate. This is just a little hard plastic disc thing that comes with the petri films. You don't need to order anything extra. You'll need a beaker or some sort of vessel that you can measure 100 milliliters into. The 150 milliliter beaker is nice, so it gives you some wiggle room. Sterile water. You'll need this for diluting the sample.
The amount of time you spent looking for sterile water and my dumbass trying to help you, I was like, just get distilled water, it's fine. And
it's you're like, no, sterile water. No, but that's good for people to know. Distilled water is not sterile water.
Right.
Sterile water. Yeah. Sterile water is like what you could inject into your body, right? Don't do that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the difference of
Don't do that.
So
it's like IV water, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But it's just sterile water.
Right.
IV a lot of times has extra stuff in it.
Okay.
Anyways, this now has that been sorted science all that out
with milkmaids.
In case anybody tuned in, you can find sterile water at a lot of pharmacies and medical supply places.
But not in Wyoming.
Not where I live. I went to every option. I'll include the link. I ordered mine. You will need 100 milliliters each time. So sterile water is frequently used like in reconstituting vaccines. So they'll be in like, you'll frequently find them in like
They're tiny.
1 milliliter vials.
Oh, good. Right? Yeah.
So you just keep that in mind when you are ordering. You need 100 mils each time you run a test.
So 100 tiny little bottles. Could you imagine?
Right. No.
No.
It'd be awful, especially because you'd have to syringe the liquid out every time.
You'd be there forever.
God. Right. You will need 1 milliliter syringes or pipettes. You can find these in a lot of places. Syringes, you can get those at like typically any farm store, medical supply place, yeah. That kind of stuff. I use pipettes instead of syringes. They are disposable. They're usually cheaper.
They're so handy.
You can order them in big bulk options for relatively little money. If you are impatient and live near a city, fish supply stores a lot of times have them too.
How would you know this?
Because I had a saltwater tank.
Oh, that's right. You had fish.
Yeah. So the reptiles really wasn't that big of a jump. I'm off to do the new hobby. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now I'm a dairy person.
This is my personality now. I'm only about dairy. Yeah.
So you will need a black fine point marker. Really could be any color, but you're just a marker of some sorts to mark your counts. And some way to keep records. Again, this is optional. You don't have to be in a retentive, but however you decide to do it.
A new notebook. Like, right. You get a shiny new notebook and you write those numbers in there.
Spreadsheet.
Yes.
Ooh, la la.
You're speaking my language.
Talk spreadsheets to me.
We're such nerds.
When I run tests, which is funny because I don't even use spreadsheets in this application. When I run the tests, I label the plates at the top with the animal's name, date, and runtime.
Yeah.
And when
you send it off, you do the same thing.
Yeah. You just write it on the vial.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and then at the bottom of the film, I write the results on there. And then I take a picture of it on my phone and save it into testing album.
Right.
So I can look back and see the results.
It's really handy picture. Because then you don't have to go get the notebook. Like, you always have your phone
exactly.
on you.
Yeah, exactly. So I find that if something like that takes me an extra step, I just won't do it.
Right.
So that's how I've decided to do it. And it works well for me.
Yeah.
Cleanup supplies. So remember, you're trying to grow bacteria here, which isn't typically what we do as a society. And chances are good that you're not going to be, with these two tests I'm talking about, you're not going to be growing anything to a larger degree than probably already exists on your farm. That doesn't mean that you get to be reckless with a biohazard. So in a laboratory, what they would typically do is send the plates through an autoclave.
What is an autoclave, Stephanie?
It's a laboratory version of a pressure cooker, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a vessel that you close the lid on and it reaches incredibly high temperatures and pressure. Do not use your pressure cooker to do this. You do not need bacteria in your pressure cooker. I don't know why I feel like I need to say that. But right. So we don't own an autoclave. Most people don't. If you do, more power to you. I would keep a container of 190 proof alcohol. You can also use bleach to submerge the plates in when I'm done. You just let them sanitize and then seal them in a bag and throw them away.
Perfect.
So that is
no fire involved.
No fire.
No fire.
So finally, what you guys came here for.
It's in one episode though.
Maybe. I'm still talking. You give me a minute, woman. Give me some time.
Yeah.
So finally, we're getting there. Running an APC and a TC are basically the same procedure. I'm going to go through them together. I'll differentiate when appropriate. First, you want to get everything prepared, cleaned, set up, wipe down your workspace with disinfectant. One note here is it is recommended not to be running these tests in the same area that you do your milk, whether that be milking, milk handling. I wouldn't run them in your kitchen if I were you. Try and keep them separate from your food if you can.
Yeah.
Even like a closet, a basement. I have mine set up out in my barn. I know that's not applicable for everybody. So get everything wiped down, cleaned out, get out all of your materials. And then I like to start my incubator ahead of time. It doesn't take long for mine to get up to temperature.
But you're not waiting then.
Right. If you're doing a DIY version, you may really want to get it started ahead of time. You'll just need to know your equipment.
And you probably want to play with it before, like pretend that you're going to set up these plates and just get it to temperature and see how long it holds and whatever.
Yeah. And that way you're not wasting supplies. Yeah. You're like, oh, wow, that took 12 hours to get up to temperature.
Yeah.
So after you have everything set up and ready to go, you'll want to get your milk ready. So for the total coliform, it's already ready to go. You're not going to do anything special to it. For the APC, you'll want to do a dilution. And the reason for this is because the number of colony-forming units, or CFUs, in 1 milliliter of milk will be a huge number that can be really hard to count visually. And we'll go over the results here in a bit. So I'll make that a little bit more clear. To do the dilution, though, you're going to get your beaker and you're going to add 99 milliliters of sterile water. just below 100 milliliter line, add 1 milliliter of milk, and you can use your little pipette to do that, and then give it a good swirl. Get it all mixed in. Your dilution's done. So to plate these things for the total coliform, first off, double check that you've got the correct petri film. Write the animal's name, date, and time across the top with your marker. Suck up 1 milliliter of milk. This is the not diluted version. You lift up the clear film and apply it to the center of the plate. And then you carefully lay the film back down on top, and you use the plate spreader, that hard plastic disc, on top to generally distribute the milk evenly. This takes a bit of finesse, surprisingly. You'll see on the TC plate, there's a round circle that they would like you to keep the milk in.
Yeah.
That's where the food is. And if you squish it out of the circle, it's not the end of the world, other than now your results could be a little skewed because you've got some milk out of the testing zone. So I've had to redo it in the past. Once you get the hang of it, it's easy, but it can take a little bit of practice. So for the APC, the procedure is exactly the same for plating, other than you're going to use 1 milliliter of the diluted milk. Again, that's really important. So now to incubate, you're going to place your films on the incubator trays and carry them from underneath. Ask me how I know. It's easier than you think to spill the milk out of there. It doesn't look like it should be. Make sure you check your temperature in there too. Like that laser gun that we always talk about, the infrared.
Yeah, we should be sponsored by them.
We really should. We talk about them almost every
episode. It's $12.
Too. Right.
It's fun to point. Who wouldn't want it?
Infrared instant laser thermometer. That's what we're talking
and
about.
And it translated to Celsius by a push of a button.
You don't even need us.
You don't need us.
Not that we are helpful. Anyhow.
Right. Get one.
And especially test the temperature before you do it if you're doing a DIY incubator, because it'll just fluctuate more. My incubator has a digital readout on the top. I still check it just to make sure. So you'll incubate the total coliform for 24 hours and the aerobic plate count for 48 hours. Now, to read these tests when they're ready, you'll just remove the plate and carefully and then start looking. There's a good chance that your total coliform plate will have nothing on it, and that's what you want. But it's, similar to the CMT, it can be like, am I seeing anything? Am I not seeing anything? What's it supposed to look like? Be sure you look up a picture before you go. And I think I have a picture from when I was having issues. So I'll post that if I have it. If there are coliform colonies present, you will see a dot with an air pocket around it, because coliforms in particular produce a gas. So that count, if you see that dot, one dot with air pocket equals one colony forming unit or CFU. And then I write the results at the bottom. So I'll do like TC equals 3, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Or what have you. Or however you decide to do your records. But that's what I do. There will be red dots on your APC when it's ready to read, regardless of how clean your cow is. If there's no red dots, you failed. Start over. That's all there is to that, because it's growing all of the bacteria, good and bad. So you're going to want to count these dots and write the results at the bottom of the film. And again, as I briefly mentioned earlier, dispose of the plates properly. I do mine in either alcohol or bleach. Submerge them in there. Let them sit a day or so. Then zip bag them and throw them away. So that, like, you've just ran a test. That's as simple as it is.
Congratulations.
You've done it. So results. We talked about good test results and what to do about them if they aren't in the raw milk episodes. But a home testing situation is slightly different, only in the sense of how the results are reported. And this did take me quite a while to figure out. I sent Tara a picture. Like, I ran a test every day for quite some time.
Yes, you did.
Like, why? So what does this mean? Like, my results are like 173. That doesn't add up to whatever the lab says, right? Like, what does this mean? After doing insane Googling, I ended up just calling my lab.
The thing that you should have done first.
In the first place, right? I always think no one's going to want to help me.
But they love to.
Yeah. But I'm like, why am I going to call them to take away their business? But they're like, oh, here's how you do it. Like, they're happy to share. Right. So anyhow, the TC, the total coliform, is super easy since you did not dilute the milk. So what you see is what you have. Ideally, you will have a 0 colony forming units per milliliter. But the recommended limit is under 10 colony forming units per milliliter. I don't typically drink it if it's over 0, but I'm also paranoid.
Here's the thing. Do you remember when I got mine back for Dixie and it said something, I can't even remember, but it was like alarming, right?
Yeah.
You were like, this is concerning. Well, it turns out that they let it go over 24 hours.
At the lab?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
There's nothing grew at 24 hours, but they let it go over 24 hours and then something grew from that. So they did count it. Oh, I forgot that detail. Yeah. Yeah. So again, if you're sending it to a lab, just ask for clarification.
Double check.
Because you and I didn't have any idea what that meant. So to me, if it's like one CFU, whatever.
Because it had something in parentheses behind it.
Yeah.
That for them denoted that it was like extended.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, what does that mean? That was what it was.
It was extended. Yeah. Yeah. So that just meant that they let it go over 24 hours.
Yeah. I frequently left my TC in for 48 hours and I've never had that issue.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not possible, but anyhow. So under 10 is what's recommended. I don't drink if it's over zero, but I'm paranoid. So you guys need to figure that out. Remember too that coliform is typically an environmental in origin, and I think that's what they had said with your cow, was that because she was hairy, was probably where it was coming from.
Well, and then she had like dry teats too, so like skin flakes were coming in, which is not a huge issue because you filter it, but still it's like in contact with the milk,
right?
But I debugged all that.
And I was gonna say, this is like when you were very first learning.
No, it wasn't. It was
hair.
Yeah, it was this, because before that, all my tests were fine. It was when she had mastitis, remember? Oh. After I got her through that. I just never shaved her much.
Oh, okay. So maybe, because you didn't shave her the first time. Mm-mm. Okay, anyways, I don't know why we have to hash that out right now. So because it's typically environmental, if you're having higher results, start with the environment situation. So clean your equipment more thoroughly, clean the animal more thoroughly, the parlor, and then test again. So we did have an issue with high coliform when we first got our milking machine going. Turns out coliform love hiding in vacuum lines.
Yeah.
Had no idea. I had no idea. So we did like more thorough cleaning on everything. We did the cow. I mean, it was like this whole deal. I was beating my head against the wall. Yeah. Like, where is this coliform coming from? So anyways, we ended up figuring it out. But I haven't had a test over zero since I figured it out. So for the APC, on the other hand, the aerobic plate count, you're going to need to do some math. Not really, but just a little bit. So remember, you did dilute that sample, right? 1 to 100. So when you count your plate, you might get something like 15 red dots, which this is what I was struggling with. It's like,
it's very confusing.
But the lab reports it like you're doing good if you're under 2,500, right? So I'm like, how am I getting 15? I should be getting more.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not doing it right. So what you need to do to that 15 red dots is add two zeros so that your results would actually be 1,500 colony forming units per milliliter.
Right.
But this is why we dilute though, because it would be way too hard to count 1,500 little dots on a plate. And I mean, counting to 1,500 is kind of extensive.
It's a thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not robots.
Also, the plate is so small, you wouldn't be able to differentiate one dot from the next, really. So diluting just makes it easier to count so you can get a more accurate picture of what you're dealing with. And APC results are, like I said, typically desired to be under 2,500 colony forming units. I won't drink it above that. However, industry standard, which is where more normal people lie, is anywhere between 10 and 20,000. And it kind of depends on who you're talking to. Like the state of Idaho is 15. The raw milk group, They're not a government. They're just a group. In Colorado, they recommended 10. I think Washington State is 20,000. So
you need to just like do your research. Talk to your, if you're buying milk, like talk to the producer.
Yeah.
And make sure that they have tests on results of that. Because if they do not produce results for you or let you see it, then I wouldn't drink it.
That's shady.
Yeah, that's shady.
So if you do have high test results, it truly can come from all of the places with an APC. And it can be really, really hard to troubleshoot. So if mine were high, I would immediately analyze my cooling system first, probably, and then double check your cooling systems by double checking the milk temperatures at like 1 hour intervals.
Yeah.
Make sure you're getting it cool. When I first had all four of my goats come into milk, I had a higher than I liked. I sent it to the lab, SPC at that point, but same test. And what I ended up deciding was that it took me a lot longer to milk one or four goats than one, right?
Yeah.
So by the time I got through the four, the milk from the first goat had actually been sitting out at room temperature for quite some time.
Right.
So I started chilling in between the goats.
Right.
And that fixed it entirely. So also look at the same environmental factors like you would if you had a coliform issue. The reason I say to start with those two, because those are the easiest to fix and you hope it's there. If it's not there, that might be signs that it's mastitis or improper milking technique, perhaps. The cool thing about testing at home is that you can use your tests to help you figure out what's going on quickly. So, for example, when I had the high coliform issue, at that very next milking, I ran two coliform tests, right?
Right.
So the first one I did exactly the same as I had before, like milk has gone all the way through the process and jarred. And then the other one I did squirted straight from the cow into the beaker and ran a test immediately.
Yeah.
This rules out the machine or any of the equipment I have or any of the milk handling. Just check the cow herself, essentially. I say essentially because when I'm squirting the milk into the beaker, there's a chance something could fall into that beaker, right? But it's never touched the milk machine or my jars or my filter or any of that. So that's one way that you can kind of figure things out. Essentially, now I have two tests to check the entire process. I found out that the cow was clean and that the entire process wasn't. So that told me that it wasn't the cow's issue. It was in the environment or my equipment, which is how I ended up determining, anyways, where it was coming from. So you can take this even farther. Say you figure out it's not the cow, but it's the process. Well, is it the milking machine? Is it the jars? Is it the filter? You can take a sample at any of those points.
Yeah.
To dial, you know, it was fine until it reached step F, and at step F, it got F'd.
Right.
So.
It's your bucket or whatever.
Seriously. Exactly. Yeah. Which is what I think is way cool about on-farm testing. If you had to send all that off to a lab, you could.
Oh, very absolutely. Expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. And take quite a bit of money. So. That's really the end of the episode. I threw this in because I think it's cool to note if you're interested. We're just not going to cover them because I haven't really used them at all. I own them. But there exists a product called 3M Quick Swabs. And these swabs are like little cotton balls in a reagent sort of situation. And they can be super helpful when tracking down contamination sources. You can use them to test any surface you like. Countertops, inside the milking claw, inside the milk buckets, or inside your jars. And Jean Ackless Caldwell lays out this whole procedure for the swabs in particular in her book. So if you're interested in that, check it out. But essentially, I mean, it's a little bit more complicated, but you would swab the surface, swab the plate, and you can run the test similarly, right? I have them on hand in case I ever need to get aggressive in tracking down a problem. They're a great tool to have as well. And my thought process on it was I'm just going to order it and pay the shipping once.
Yeah.
In case I ever need them. But we will have the link to those as well as all of the other equipment that we mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Again, grab the Small Scale Dairy book. It's fantastic. And if you guys have any questions for me on testing, I'd be happy to talk about it because it's just not talked about. So
yeah, there's not a lot of information out there. So it's really good that you're able to put this out and do this, Stephanie.
Yeah, it took a long time to figure it out.
Right.
It took a long time to figure it out, but her book is really deserves all the credit.
It's a great one. I have that on hand, even though I don't get as technical as Stephanie does. I'm very low key, whereas she goes for it. And I mean, like, I clean and I do send mine off to get tested. It's just not, like, farm testing for me is not something I'm able to do, but maybe in the future. It's really cool.
Right.
It's a really cool thing.
It's a cool thing to know is out there if you are at all interested. So.
Right.
And especially, too, it's a great marketing entity.
Yeah.
If you're selling.
Like, on-farm testing.
Yeah. Every batch is tested on-farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would also say that we do regular third-party testing as well.
Yeah.
Because I always like, oh, you do all your own testing, huh?
Right. The cynic I'm like, in
that
you.
That means they're just doing the CMT and that's it, you
right.
know? But get on your social media platform and share with your customers
the
results.
Yeah, or the process.
Teach them what a good result is.
Yeah.
Yeah, show them your equipment and this is how you do it. And
when I was active in like the Raw Milk Montana thing, I would always post my results on there because almost all of them were not. So I was like, okay, this is what a result looks like if you send it to the lab. And I do think that's encouraging other people to keep up with what they should be doing in the first place. So
yeah. Well, because some people just don't know about testing at all.
Right.
And then it's kind of intimidating because there's no, you Google how to bake a cookie and you've got pages and pages and pages of results of how to bake a cookie. It's not that easy to find the information on testing.
No.
Even sending to a lab. So yeah, it's important to get that stuff out there And just because somebody isn't doing it doesn't mean they're heinous.
No, I think
right?
a lot of people are uneducated in this topic.
Yeah. I would like to think if you are going the extra step to make a profit off of this, that you've
put thought educated. Into it. Yes.
Yeah. But then once you have, use it as marketing. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Good. It's good to do.
Yeah. So on that note, what do we say? Happy testing this time?
Happy testing. No. Happy milking.
Bye.
Bye.